we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Southend Standard, read by Diana Speed.
Calls for increased patrols as fly tippers dump on playing field.
Thanks to Viola Joy for tweeting us that fecal matter. Now, let's meet the teams. Really welcome first on my left, Susan Kalman and Danny Finkelstein. And opposite them on my right, Frankie Boyle and Angela Barnes. Susan, who is leading an appeal for unity?
Oh, this was the socialist jamboree that was the Labour Party conference this week. I have to be quite honest with you. I didn't watch all of it. I had the builders in, so I was literally watching paint dry instead. But with the advent of Twitter, you can be alerted to interesting things that happen without actually watching it. So Laura Koonsberg tweeted, someone's just punched a wall. Now that's going to get me watching it. But a lot of things happened. Someone punched a wall because the autocue was changed before a speech. Tom Watson did a fairly decent stand-up section. There was an unfortunate incident with some problems with a fringe meeting about anti-Semitism. It was just the old things again and again. And Jeremy Corbyn was re-elected with a landslide and did a speech which was full of policy information, which was a surprise to many people. And he also said they wanted to be the party that was elected. Now, I'm going to say something slightly controversial at this point, so if Radio 4 listener, you're having your pre-dinner canapé, put it down immediately. I don't think Jeremy Corbyn is actually the problem with the Labour Party. He reminds me of a man who's attending a wedding and it all kicks off and everyone's punching each other in the face. And he jumps on the top table and does a very heartfelt rendition of Coldplay's Fix You, and he really means it. He made a plea for unity in the Labour Party. Now that he's been re-elected, he said, let's unify, we can't keep fighting. And I think my concern is that sometimes we really, really want things, don't we? We really want things, but they don't happen. And I should know, Miles, I met Gillian Anderson. And I really... I think the concern is he's been re-elected, he did a speech which I think was very positively received, but whether or not everyone will calm down and allow the Labour Party to be the opposition is another matter.
Well, what do you think, Danny? I mean, you're sort of inside this dirty old game of politics.
I was there, actually, in Liverpool, so I think I can answer the question, as I don't think they are going to come together, but it was pretty interesting to watch. I'm always a bit sympathetic to the person who's delivering the speech, because having, you know, worked with politicians who delivered them, I know that it can go wrong. Last year, Jeremy Corbyn ended up reading out the script direction. Do you remember? He said, strong message here, which was supposed to be... he did do a bit better this time. But I did write a speech once for William Hague, and as we were printing it out, someone stepped on the plug and the whole of the law and order section didn't print out. When he read it, it was completely missing. And the next day, The Guardian said this was a great speech without any of the normal Tory rubbish about law and order.
The thing is, there were some really light-hearted moments. If you've watched it, Jeremy Corbyn was praising Sadiq Khan. He's quite a stony face, and then he does the most delicious tiny wink. It's like he's been practising that his entire life, just this almost imperceptible wink. To no one in particular.
Was it to no one in particular, Danny?
Well, I think his eye line, I mean, I wasn't there. Was he winking at the stage, do you think?
I don't know, he's just a winker, I think.
He's just a winker.
Wasn't it basically just two sides of a party that hate each other deciding which of them gets to lose the next election? It's sort of like watching the Elephant Man decide which side to part his hair. Corbyn, I think he gets a hard time in the media, but at the same time, if you can't be more popular than Theresa May, who looks like she's just stepped out of a haunted mirror... I used to like it when they used to have their conference in Blackpool, you know, because they had all these power brokers and then they'd have to, you know, they'd be used to maybe a five-star hotel or something and they've got to spend the night in a B&B run by a Scottish couple in the witness protection programme.
A friend of mine went to Blackpool and they wanted to have a bath and it was locked. They said, bath night's Thursday. Didn't you have one before you came?
Yeah. It was quite sweet because, I mean, they were trying their best to inject some levity into what was clearly a tense situation. So Tom Watson was having a go at Ed Balls, who's on Strictly this year. And I don't know if you watch Strictly, if that's something that people watch, but he wasn't that bad. I mean, he wasn't the worst possible person. I mean, it was rubbish. But it was a curious thing. Obviously, it is like a really tense family wedding where people don't like each other, but because there are cameras everywhere now catching everything, there's just some really forced smiles amongst all of the Labour Party members because they know they have to do something to make themselves vaguely electable.
I quite enjoyed Corbyn's speech because I like Corbyn as a man. I just wasn't sure whether he is Prime Minister material. Still not sure if he is. But I liked his speech because he was starting to lay out policy. Because before, you know, he's talked a lot about kinder and fairer and gentle politics, and that's great in concept. But I don't know if that's what I want from a Prime Minister or what I want from a shadow leader. The only thing I really want to be kind and gentle is my gynaecologist in my shampoo.
Danny, I mean, is he improving, do you think, Corbyn? Is he becoming more electable?
He is improving, but he isn't becoming more electable. I think he definitely did better in the conference. He was definitely spoke with more confidence. And obviously they challenged him and they lost, you know, and if you are going to shoot at someone, you better kill them, basically, and they didn't.
Right, is that...
It's all turned very dark. Very quickly. He was much better, and he is very passionate about things, and I do like the fact he isn't polished in terms of his speaking style. I think that's quite a refreshing thing to see, and people say, oh, he's not very good at public speaking. It was a good speech, and he did put forward policies. The good thing is he's put forward policies now that we can agree or disagree with, rather than agreeing or disagreeing with the man himself, which is always a very personal thing, at least you can have a discussion about what the Labour Party stands for.
Yeah, no, I think that may have been where he went wrong. It's in the policies. I think he may regret that later.
Speaking about immigration in the way he did is obviously going to lose him voters, because you can't... The key demographic they need to win over are the same people that vote UKIP and that are frightened of immigration. You can't win over people scared of immigration by telling them there's probably going to be more immigration. It's like trying to win over the Westboro Baptists by taking them to a Kylie concert. Like, it's not...
Danny, you've been spending quite a lot of time with a former politician recently. Yeah. What have you been up to on your holidays?
Well, you're referring to story in last week, paper that I was working with David Cameron, sort of recording a kind of oral history of his premiership for 6 years. It was really, really interesting to do.
Were you recording it? You were recording it while it was happening?
Yeah, so we're doing interviews along the way while it was happening, so you get what the Prime Minister thinks they're doing while they're doing it. It's very interesting things.
Are there anything, moments when he's like terrifyingly prescient or like disastrous? Well, I can think of one.
You'll have to wait.
Where he was, perhaps didn't quite predict the outcome. Merrily, this is the news of old, new and forevermore leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who called for unity between the 62% of the party who voted for him and the 38% red Tory mainstream media-believing, nuclear-weapon-loving, shortbread-denying, Chaka Umana-loving scum. He also told the conference there'd be £500 billion of new spending, but we tell children their pets are going to heaven. The speech was well received, but you have to remember people's expectations were very low. Anything short of accidentally insulting the memory of Princess Diana and then getting his head stuck in a bucket was always going to be chalked up as a win. Mr. Corbyn ended his speech by promising to build a fairer Britain in a peaceful world before releasing a white dove into the rafters and launching into a tear-streaked rendition of Michael Jackson's Earth Song. Not a dry eye in the movement. Danny, whose room for improvement is debatable?
Well, I think this refers to the debates between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton that were on this week. And Hillary Clinton sort of widely perceived to have won the debates. And Donald Trump, sort of after the first half an hour, began to zone out. And actually for him, he was pretty restrained, really. So I had the dubious honour of trying to read his book. And he isn't exactly basically a master of policy detail, so he does struggle at points. His solution to the healthcare problem is to lock everyone in a room until they come up with a solution to the healthcare problem. And I thought locking everyone in a room was a solution to the crime problem. But he basically is full of things like this. I'm really, really rich. I mean, I'm really rich. My favourite was at the end of the book, he says, I'm a really nice guy. So I think he's going to say also that he's self-deprecatory as well.
He didn't even write that book, though, did he? Because his ghostwriters come out against him. But at least Hitler wrote his book. I sort of think it's not so much an election as sort of a competition to try and find the second worst person in the world. It's maybe the most important decision in 50 years, maybe since the war. And I don't know about you, but any time there's a really important decision, I often think, Well, I hope no Americans are involved in taking this decision. I hope no one from a country that made 7 Fast and the Furious movies. I hope nobody that finds James Corden funny is involved in this decision.
I don't know where the audience's line is there, James. I think it was really interesting to watch for me. Not since the film Showgirls have I seen my life so represented on screen in front of me.
Are there 2 versions of Showgirls?
Because it was horrific to watch. So basically, Hillary Clinton had to stand and smile against a misogynistic, racist bully. Because as a woman, if she said what she thought, she'd be a bitch and therefore not electable because she has to be likable. And before the debate, everyone was saying, so the bar was very, very low for Donald Trump, and basically Hillary Clinton had to stand and smile. And that woman has practiced smiling for a very long period of time. She represented almost every single part of my life where men have tried to explain to me what I mean by things. So you say something, oh no, I think what you actually mean. And it's only as I've got past my 40th birthday that I've started saying, no, I know what I mean. Because in the past, you would smile because I would hate to anyone to think I was unlikable. And what I do now is I continue talking until they shut up. Now, she can't do that, but personally, try and interrupt me, Miles.
No.
Well, the thing is, you see, Miles. And to me, it was really interesting because America would rather vote for a racist, misogynistic bully than a woman. And that's the fundamental point of it.
Well, do you think Trump is going to win?
Yes, I do. I really do think he is going to win. The American public are wanting to send a message about what they feel about things, and there is very little that she can do about it. He interrupted her, you know, every 2 minutes and said, no, you're wrong, this is the right thing. And to me, it was a prime example of how in 2016, you can be the most qualified person for the job, but if you are a woman, you're not going to get the job. And I think it's actually quite sad.
Well, Angela, we've heard the anti-Trump side.
I didn't watch the debate live. I didn't stay up and watch it. And the next morning, I just sort of looked on Facebook because somebody had posted a transcript of the debate. And I was just looking at what Trump said. And I was like, oh, good, a word puzzle. It was just... We are in a post-truth situation. Like, it doesn't seem to matter how many lies he tells. There was one estimate was that 79% of what Trump said in that debate was a demonstrable lie. And you know how he was sniffing all the way through the debate? I think he was just, is that my pants on fire? I think that's the only...
Because his microphone, didn't he? Because he's so used to lying and being believed by idiots that he thinks we're going to go, oh, they gave him one of those sniffing microphones. That's not fair.
Because Hillary had obviously prepared for the debate, which Trump clearly hadn't. And apparently she prepared by an aide posing as Donald Trump for her to practice, like, role-playing the debate. I mean, I say aide, I think it was her 2-year-old grandchild that they used. And it was just... I don't know, the whole thing, I looked at it, and as they both came out on stage, I was like, this looks more like the AGM of a bridge club. I don't know.
Do you remember when you thought George Bush was the bottom? That's the bottom right there. Someone who's so stupid that he can barely really speak. And it turns out there's this whole thing underneath. It goes all the way down to someone who looks like a melted action figure of He-Man, who doesn't even really have policies. They're more the sort of things that a drunk would say on a bus when he gets shaken awake by a pothole.
The relief when Obama was elected, the sort of palpable, oh, they're not mad, and now, oh, no, they are. If Donald Trump does replace Obama in the White House, will that be evidence that orange is the new black?
What I really like about Donald Trump, if I could say something that I like about Donald Trump...
It'd be amazing
Trump.
If this was the bit that stayed in and not your earlier bit.
Yes.
If you could
keep in all the bits about me not liking Corbyn and liking Trump, that'll make my life a lot easier on Twitter. What I like about him is the veracity with which he says, believe me. That's how he finishes everything. Yeah. Believe me. And everyone goes, okay. He has a really astonishing ability to say things which are just wrong. So he talked about the birther movement, which was a hideous racist stigma against Obama, that he wasn't American, and he said, I finished it, believe me, Clinton started it, believe me. None of that happened. But what we have to remember...
I thought the birther myth was the idea that Barack Obama is really an old lady called Bertha.
I still think, on balance, Hillary will win. I basically think Donald Trump is an experiment, because, you know, in America they always say that anyone can be president, and they're he's basically trying to prove that it's true.
Isn't the American dream now just that both candidates die from natural causes?
Tiresomely, this is the first US presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and a bag of organs and race hate disguised as a man. It was a glorious sight, a curmudgeonly millionaire and a girl who just wants to be loved meeting on a balmy fall evening in New York, like the first scene in a wonderful romantic comedy written by Richard Curtis and Satan. Throughout the debate, Trump appeared to keep sniffing, something which was apparently caused by air being sucked into the vacuum behind his eyes. Trump complained that his performance suffered as a result of a faulty microphone, possibly one of those troublesome microphones that makes you sound like a self-important psychopath, much like the ones they use on the Moral Maze. I didn't watch the debate live, as it was broadcast at 2 a.m, when, of course, I'm normally tucked up in the corner of a tiger, smashing my 7th vodka Red Bull and throwing bar stools at a PCSO. Points to Danny. Frankie, who may have left with sweet FA?
Oh, Sam Allardyce. He's had to leave as England manager, which surprised me because I thought English football didn't have a corruption problem. I thought its only problems were racism, sexism, homophobia, players gambling, match fixing, sexual assaults, and a failure to perform at major tournaments. But basically what Sam Allardyce has done, he's tried to help people get round some laws which exist to stop a thing called third-party ownership of players. So the idea is, instead of a club owning a player's contract, they would be owned by something like a conglomerate, in much the way that racehorses are now owned by conglomerates. And I actually think to bring the standards of horse racing into football would improve performances. If Wayne Rooney got injured this week and a little curtain went up round him on the pitch and a vet walked in with a shotgun, everybody else is going to play better. And if you do well, there's rewards. You know, you're put out to stud. You're put out to stud like you were Desert Orchid or Ryan Giggs or somebody. And I mean, it's not seedy. We just keep someone like Wayne Rooney in a field and occasionally we trick him into mounting a pair of fiberglass buttocks. And then he's finished off by a farmer wearing marigolds. I don't know what the Radio 4 tone is at the moment. I wish Allardyce had just owned the thing, right? If he'd just come out and go, I love money. I was making $3 million a year, I wanted more money. See, when they're tossing the coin in the centre circle, I want to run out and get it.
In the video, it looked like he was drinking a pint of wine. Has this taken you by surprise, Susan? I know that you're a big fan of Sam Allardyce, and it must to find his integrity called into question like this must be shocking.
Oh, yes, I was beside myself. The thing that I find quite curious about it is the financial situation. There must be a point in life where you have enough money. You know, there must be a point where you think, no, I've got enough, I don't need another £400,000. You know, when you go to the cash line, you probably don't know this, Danny, when you go to a cash line...
I have my money brought to me on a cushion.
Yes, I thought that. When I go to the cash line on a Friday night and I think, oh, I hope I've got enough for a pint...
The cash line? You mean the cash machine?
Or the cash line.
Is it delivered to you on a line?
No, the cash line, that's what it's called.
Do you mean your washing line?
Don't start doing this thing you do with me, Miles, where you do that thing? Whole, I don't understand your common ways. Don't.
Susan,
are you telling her what she actually meant?
I applaud this rare moment of warp chivalry, Frankie. No, I'm asking her what she actually meant. What is the cash line?
The
cash lens. It's what we call a cash machine. My mother has never forgiven you. You once said my upbringing sounded like Angela's ashes. Do you know the text messages I got from my mother after that? The cash line is the cash machine, and you go and you get a statement out before you take your money out to check you have enough money to take them. To see how much money
you've
got.
You don't ask for it on screen. You literally print a statement out.
Yeah, then you look at it.
And there's a couple of things I'm finding fault. Here's one is the way your cash line. The other one, you claiming that I think you're common when I absolutely don't, Susan. If I thought anyone was common, it wouldn't be the privately educated daughter of a Knight of the Realm. But... everything else I happily take on board.
Yeah. Sometimes our flirting just gets so excessive. What I'm saying is, if I printed out at the cash line my statement and it had £3 million on it, I'd probably think I've got enough money.
Maybe what we should do is you have the England manager like jury service. I mean, just an idea.
You just get a letter and say, please show up in San Marino at 6 p.m. Thursday night. We've got to choose what kit they wear, then just sort of get the lads to spread out a bit, that sort of thing. I think with the record of played 1-1-1, I think the obvious choice for next manager would probably be Sam Allardyce. He sounds really good. I'll be sad to see him go. There's a Telegraph. Do you know what I think? Are the Telegraph in trouble? I mean, that footage, 2016, that footage looked like it was from sort of 1999 or something. It was unbelievably grainy. My children accidentally shoot far better quality covert videos than that. Fluvially, this is the news that following undercover filming, Sam Allardyce has been sacked by the FA, becoming the most efficient England manager ever, skipping the disappointing tournament exit and cutting straight to the ensuing humiliation. In the video, Allardyce was pictured with what appeared to be a pint of wine, something that may have affected his judgment, although in my experience, the first pint merely sharpens your instincts. It's the third pint that causes problems. Former FA chairman Greg Dyke said that if you want to be England manager, you have to be whiter than white. Former England captain John Terry agreed, though for different reasons. 2 points to Frankie. And at the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Daniel have 4, and so too do Frankie and Angela. We start round two with a headline from the Perthshire Courier.
Local scientists' premature ejaculation treatment can't come quickly enough.
Our thanks to Jeff MacDonald for sending us that turgid observation. Angela, who's saying police, body-mounted camera, action?
According to a report by Cambridge University, there's been a 93% fall in complaints against police officers when they're wearing a body cam. Right? So it appears that people behave better when they're being filmed. I don't know how that explains away Geordie Shore. Now, the study was done in Britain and in the States, right? And I'm not sure if the cameras are the main reason, really, for the falling complaints in the States. I think it might be more to do with the fact it's very difficult to make a complaint when you've been shot dead. On the plus side, though, police will be able to supplement their income by sending clips into You've Been Framed.
I think they've been trying to do this for a long time, actually. It's about having the technology available. They wanted to do it originally with the sort of Robert Peel era, but they had to make the suspect stand still for upwards of half an hour. We've got a lot of police listeners, so we need to be relatively careful. They play this programme loudly in interview rooms to cover up the sound of screaming.
It wouldn't stop me...
committing crimes?
Being laid out with the police for a very practical reason.
You wouldn't stop me being leery with the police. That's what I like to get up to at the weekend. Look, a couple of coppers have just walked in the other road. You know, I'm just going to put my coat on and go and be a bit leery with them.
I was at the Wigton Book Festival and I was getting ready to go on stage and I said, I'll go and check my hair. And I couldn't see myself in the mirror because the mirrors were too high up. It's a common problem. I very rarely can see myself in mirrors. An average-sized man or women with their camera will not be able to film me because I'll be underneath the range of the camera. And then it'll get to court and they'll be like, no, there's nothing there. And I'll go, well, it's not guilty, Your Honour. Because I'm short.
It's not a foolproof criminal plan.
Have you got a plan B of like what you do if one of the policemen sort of bends over slightly?
My defence then is what happened to me was at Paddington Station yesterday and a woman ran up to me, hugely excited, hugely, like, you know, proper starstruck, excited.
I'm Mrs. Brown. You must come and live with us.
She ran up to me and she was like... She ran up to me and went, oh, it's you. And I was like, yes, it is. Yes, whatever, I'll stop bothering. Yes, it is. She went, oh, Rona, it's so lovely. She said, oh, you're Rona Cameron. And she was so excited, I said I was. So I would say I was Rona Cameron. That would be my other defence.
You on board with the police?
I worry about being tasered. Because I don't think that I'm fit enough to survive a tasering. I think I'd ask them to get their gun out, because my best chance is that they shoot me dead and the taser restarts my heart.
Do you think this is a good idea, Danny? You're quite into surveillance, are you?
It will work. I mean, it's a very good idea and it does work. My only recent encounter with the police was that I called them out because my iPad had disappeared from the back seat of my car, and they came round, I saw them looking around in the drive, and they came in and they said, this iPad, sir, does it look like the iPad on the back seat of your wife's car?
They were very nice. It's terrible, isn't it, when people you love steal from you? Generously, this is the news that an experiment where police wore body-mounted cameras resulted in a 93% fall in complaints from members of the public. Although the police say the complaints didn't fall, they merely slipped while the custody officer's back was turned. What we don't know is if the fall in complaints is due to the public behaving better or the police behaving better. It's like the light in the refrigerator problem. Is the light on when the fridge door is closed, or does it just come on when you open the door and start slamming the suspect's face in it? But the study has shown having cameras trained on you makes you behave better, unless you're the Countryfile team. Apparently some of the things they have to edit out could strip paint off a battleship. I have to say, I myself have never been in trouble with the police, unless loving too much is a crime, in which case, lock me up. 2 points to Angela.
Loving too much what?
I'm afraid we're bang out of time, and... And at the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Daniel have 4, and so too do Frankie and Angela. Danny, listen to this. It's getting hot in here, so hot, so take off all your clothes. I am getting so hot, I want to take my clothes off. Oh, it's getting hot in here, so hot, so take off all your clothes. I am getting so hot, I want to take my clothes off. Wow. Goodness me, Danny, we have serendipitously found your tune. Danny, who is saying Liberté, Fraternité, Nudité?
Well, this is a Green Party scheme to have a nudist area, basically, in the centre of France. The idea is there are lots of nudist tourists and they might want to come to Paris, so they should have a nudist area in the centre of the city, which means that France could be the first place that simultaneously has, like, loads of nudist areas but bans the burqa, which is a pretty ironic combination. At one point they said, we want to try a recreational area where French nudists can freely strip off, and I thought that was François Hollande's house.
I strongly disagree with any nudity in any form. I think it's wrong. My swimming costume resembles that of a Victorian strongman. In Scotland, if you tried to do kind of nudism thing, you'd lose a nipple before breakfast to frostbite. It's not the kind of place where, oh, I'm just popping out, oh, it's 8 degrees, I'll be fine. If I had to have a conversation with anyone on this panel and they had no clothes on, I would find that quite difficult. And not in a sexual way, but just, I don't think I need to know what's underneath your polo shirt, Miles. You know, because you can't unsee it. If you see someone naked, it's always there. You're always thinking. Like, if I saw you naked, that's all I could think about. Is it, you naked?
Even if I'm not there. I mean, just...
I would always... I would be burnt into my retina, the sight of your manly body.
Right. I'm surprised to hear I'm not your thing.
I used to live in Brighton, which is basically where vegans and nudists go to die. It's and they have every year, they have the naked bike ride. Is a thing. Exactly. I never think I would be begging for people to wear more lycra.
I think nudism is just a young person's game, isn't it? If I went to a nudist place, I'd feel like I was trying to spend a voucher that was years out of date. Because, like, my body shape at the moment, if I'm lying down and I get an erection, it sort of looks like a motorcyclist emerging over the brow of a hill.
Yeah, I know.
place, you've kind of got nothing to work with. Like, I could do my hair up, but really I know it would be like putting 26-inch rims on a wheelie bin. So, I mean, I think this is a bad idea. If you think waiters in Paris are rude now, wait till you've left a skid mark in their dining room.
Absolutely right. If you're a young person listening to this and you're thinking about being a nudist, do it now. Because as you get older, my body takes time to settle now. You know, whenever you get up, it just, there's a wee bit of, oh, that's us. And when you lie down, it just sits. So if you can stand up and your body doesn't kind of adjust like a waterbed, get your kit off.
You've clearly never been to a European nudist camp.
No, I have not, Angela.
My dad genuinely was a nudist. And let me tell
he
you
was
now...
was a nudist?
My dad. And, yeah, and he ran a sex shop and was a swinger. So, yeah.
My dad was a professor of engineering.
Always naked.
But if you go to a European nudist camp, it is not full of the beautiful Europeans. It's full of the sort of Europeans that used to be contestants on Going for Gold.
This is going to happen in a park in Paris, isn't it?
Yeah, near a lake. Central Paris. I didn't understand that bit, actually. He said it was going to take place in a regulated setting near a lake so that there was no threat to public order, and I didn't understand what the lake had to do with it. Why does that help?
Well, what about the other people that use the park? Yeah. Flashers, for example, are going to be
ridiculous. That's their thunder stolen. Metronomically, this is the news that Paris is to open its first nudist park. I don't understand it. You can take all your clothes off in a public park in Paris, but I do the same thing in the moat of Windsor Castle, and the armed response team just start banging on about treason. If you haven't experienced continental nudism before, perhaps ease yourself into it by just taking your pants off in front of a Delice de France. Two points to Danny. Frankie, why will we no longer accentuate our differences?
Oh, yeah, this is the story that regional accents might be dying out. So they reckon in the next 50 years, because people spend so much time interacting with computers and people hear so many American accents for various reasons, that they'll no longer be regional accents. Most Radio 4 listeners probably think that regional accents died out some decades ago. But I don't think it would necessarily be a bad thing. I think finally people from Birmingham could tell whether they had a cold. You know, regional language, it's not all just in accents. There's different ways of speaking. So, for example, I left a gig in Edinburgh recently and I heard a voice behind me going, "Mr. Boyle, a couple of moments of your time there, please." And that really puts you on the back foot in Scotland. Because in England, a clipped voice can mean educated or businesslike. In Scotland, a clipped voice means that you're a complete lunatic. My father was a Church of Scotland minister, and I served 6 years for his manslaughter. Oh, incidentally, the way this story was reported in the Daily Mail was, immigrants are killing off the Queen's English.
Like language change. I think there's always been language and accent changes. Apparently, we're all going to adopt something a lot closer to the estuary accent that I've got. The sound is going, apparently. So instead of saying mother, we'll all be saying mother. The first headline I read on this, it just said that H is coming back, and I thought it was about steps, but it's apparently about the dropped H is apparently coming back. So that's
and of course, it's 50 years' time. So with rising sea levels, by the time everybody's speaking estuary English, about 60% of England will be estuary.
When I was growing up, as a part of an immigrant community, regional accents were basically how you told whether someone had been arrested by Stalin or by Hitler. I had an aunt who had a really, really thick Polish accent. It was so difficult to understand. I basically was completely incomprehensible. And my father said, yeah, the funny thing is that when she speaks to me in Polish, I can't understand that either.
I think this is likely.
I think some of the accents are just too strong, aren't they? I went to Newcastle one time and I said to the cab driver, because it was a long cab ride, I said, how do you think Newcastle will do this year at the start of the season? And he went, "Why just come with the blacks?" And it was like it had been played backwards. I'm like, well, I've got like 15 minutes to try and work out what this means. But it turned out he was saying, watch us come out of the blocks. You know, watch us start like a sprinter kind of thing. But unless you'd had a good 15 minutes to work with him. You know, we got the flashcards out and eventually we got there.
Obstinately, this is a new study suggesting that by 2066, regional accents and dialect terms will have disappeared as we all speak an increasingly homogenised language. The experts are expecting a lot of words to change their pronunciation. Think will become fink, mother will become mother, and beauty will become booty. It's impossible to read a list like that and not think, thank God for death. 2 points to Frankie. Angela, have a listen to this. I've been missing you, I should be kissing you, honey, you could be that. I wouldn't tell a lie, got a love I can't deny. Haunted you to be, that's you for me. Haunted you to be, that's you for me. Haunted you to be. Wonderful, just wonderful. Angela, what's causing a buzz in hospitals?
So this is the news that they've discovered that Manuka honey can be used to cleanse medical equipment, and it reduces the ability of potential deadly bacteria to accumulate on surfaces by more than 75%, which is great news because hospital-acquired infections are costing the NHS billions and cost lives. On the downside, it does attract bears. So I'm not entirely sure of the science of how it works. I guess it's something like the bacteria eats the honey, develops type 2 diabetes, eventually dies. I don't know. The great thing about Manuka honey is that the bacteria don't become resistant to it like they do to antibiotics, presumably because it's so bloody delicious. I don't know. And it made me wonder, like, how many other things are just lurking in our store cupboard? It turns out that, you know, malaria can be cured by Marmite, or Nutella can cure the Zika virus, who knows? And it makes sense that honey is antibacterial when you think about it, because as far as I know, Winnie the Pooh has never had a urinary tract infection. And I trained as a nurse, so
have
I know
you
that
done
like
every job in the world. Literally, every time you mention a story, you say, I worked there. It's
well, my dad
extraordinary,
was an
extraordinary, Angela. One. You were a nurse, a linguist, you worked in a police station.
I was never a linguist. I did half a linguistic degree.
I don't believe you. I just think you've done a lot in your life, Angela.
Getting on a bit, Susan.
Yeah,
I have a link to this story. I was a bee.
When I was a student nurse, we had to do a presentation about hospital-acquired infections, and one of my cohorts on the nursing course, she did this entire presentation throughout which she was referring to Mr. Saar, who we assumed was a case study, and at the end we found out it was MRSA.
I can appreciate this. However, honey's sticky. I had my tonsils out. You don't want the surgeon, like, you're wearing gloves and it's all sticky. And I don't think I want to wake up in an operating theatre that smells of food, you know. You want to know they've had their lunch before. I mean, you don't know what's happening. When you go under, you have no idea what happens. My pants went missing, Danny. I was wearing my lucky pants when I had my tonsils out.
They were your lucky ones?
Yes. Right. I have a pair of lucky pants, which I used to wear. On, you know, Danny, do you ever wake up in the morning and think, oh, I need my lucky pants today?
Oh, every day.
Right. Yeah.
Why did they take your pants off if you were getting your tonsils out?
So this was the bad thing was, I was wearing my lucky pants, and then as I was being wheeled in, they said, oh, you have to take your pants off because they're of such cheap material they might cause a spark in the operating room. Because, I mean, they were lucky they weren't expensive. And I said, well, can I just put them under my pillow? First thing I did when I woke up was check for my pants. My pants are gone. I said, where are my pants? And they said, we don't know where your pants are. Well, the point is, you don't know what they do when you're under. You just don't know. Do you? You just don't know what they do.
That's
you just don't
right.
know.
Yeah, that is the point of the anaesthetic. So that female surgeons aren't shouted at by men who are being operated going, I think that's not where you mean to put the scalpel. It's fancy honey, isn't it, Manuka? It's not any old
monoclonal, apparently.
Monofloral.
Monofloral.
How could I have forgotten that?
And it can do anything. So people are always talking about Manuka honey. Oh, yes, I've been running my car on it for 2 years. Manuka honey. We put all our tiles up in the bathroom with it. These aren't clothes. I'm just wearing Manuka honey. George, our son George, he's just Manuka honey. It became conscious, became sentient.
Seminally, this is the news that Manuka honey could be used to fight hospital bugs. Apparently, Manuka honey can stop a biofilm of bacteria building up on a urinary catheter. Well, frankly, this sounds to me like progress for the sake of progress. I can't be the only one who liked their urinary catheters the way they were. We haven't just lost a biofilm of bacteria, we've lost a little bit of what it means to be British. Similarly, peanut butter can be used to cause massive complications during a tracheotomy. Of course, we all remember the charming children's tale in which Winnie the Pooh uses honey to sterilise the knife before carving the words 100 Acre Woods Ultras into the forehead of a terrified tigger. All part of the initiation ritual described in Chapter 5 of The Frat House at Pooh Corner by David Cameron and Danny Finkelstein. Manuka is a special kind of honey produced by a bee that feeds on middle-class anxiety rather than pollen. 2 points to Angela. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Susan.
This is taken from the Northern Lights Aurora Watch. Dear Aurora Watch UK subscriber, red alert. It is likely that Aurora will be visible by eye and camera from anywhere in the UK. Update. Dear Aurora Watch UK subscriber, we apologise for the earlier false alert, which was caused by a lawnmower creating a local disturbance at our Lancaster site.
Danny.
Taken from the BBC News website. Bharathi is a 37-year-old widow from Tamil Nadu who has started a career climbing trees to pick coconuts. She explains her radical change of career. I was a seamstress, but I struggled to make ends meet.
Frankie.
It's written by Flavia Cerone from The Guardian. French abattoir closed after secret video shows suspected animal cruelty.
Angela.
This was sent by Angus Stevenson in Brixton. It comes from the Evening Standard, and it says, parents of a boy who lost part of his finger at one of Britain's most prestigious schools blames the headmaster for not apologising and sweeping it under the carpet.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Susan and Daniel have 8, but this week's winners are Frankie and Angela with 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting digitally snipped from the Huffington Post, sent in by Julian Shea and Paula Wilson.
A Royal Mint employee has been accused of stealing $180,000 in gold by hiding it in his rectum. Leston Lawrence was discovered after a bank teller grew suspicious of his deposits.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Susan Kalman, Daniel Finkelstein, Frankie Boyle and Angela Barnes. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Diana Spee. The chair's script was written by James Kettle, Benjamin Partridge and Daniel Ward, with additional material by Eri Jackson and Robin Morgan. The producer was Paul Sheehan, and it was a BBC Studios production.